Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is Lisa from Spring Valley. Lisa.
I'm Lisa. Oh, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And this is such a huge honor. And I really like your accent because I thought you said circus animals. And liven it up a little. Okay. Welcome to the newcomers. And if I say any kind of nonsense, that's not really me talking. It's my ego. My ego thinks I should be the 45-minute speaker. And so I've been asking God to please direct my words. And somebody said, well, you should write it down. And I said, if I write it down, then it's my words. It's not God's words. So we'll see what God does tonight. And any opinions I express may not be my own. Okay, so I was born in New Jersey at a very young age. And I'm excited right now. I'm really excited. Somebody said it's the same feeling of being nervous or being excited. It's the same physical things. I have butterflies. My hands are shaking. My throat's dry. And I'm probably starting to babble. But it's the same physical symptom. And I get to come here and learn new stuff, you know, learn new ways of living. And I didn't know when I got here any of that. You'll hear in only 10 minutes. Okay, so you're going to let me know when it's 10 minutes. So what happened to me was I grew up with an alcoholic mom and an alcoholic grandmother and alcoholic aunt, and I swore I was not going to be like them. And so I did all those outside issues that they talk about, and because I was not going to ever drink and be like my mother. And so I started to do that before when I was, I guess, 11 or so, and I have a daughter here who's 11, and I just cringe to think of her drinking. And hopefully she'll never have to take this path. And what happened was when I was 14, our house caught on fire and my parents died. And so these fires are, like, big to me, you know, when the fires, and, you know, it's been a heck of a week, hasn't it? You know, and I'm glad the loss of life was practically, you know, there was a few people, unfortunately, who died, but, you know, they got us out in time, and thank you for that. And so what happened to me after that, I had to go live with some relatives that I didn't like, and they didn't really like me. There was all kinds of family rivalry and stuff, and so I went to live there with a huge resentment, and they thought perhaps since I was such a reckless child that I was the one who set the fire. And I did not last there, and I became a ward of the state, and I was just, I was lost, lonely, and I hated everybody and everything, you know. So I did substances to help me get through life. You know, it was the only way I survived all that pain. It was in the 70s, and people didn't talk about closure and, you know, oh, well, how does that make you feel? And, you know, we didn't talk about that. You know, there's a huge elephant in the living room, and you just went around it to get your stuff done, and, you know, that's what we did. So what I did, I remember being, like, in junior high saying, you know, just hook me up to an IV bottle, and that's all I want out of life. That's really all I wanted out of life, was to be numb, because life was too painful for me. My mother drank, as I said, and she went to a psychiatrist, and he gave her every drug known to mankind. He gave her barbiturates and all this stuff, and she was suicidal, and that was the role model I had, was the woman of the house. When things got bad, you tried to kill yourself, you know, so that's not a real good message, is it? So I, what happened to me happened to a lot of us, you know. I just took that path and I got stuck on it, you know. I got stuck on the path of not doing the right thing. If you told me to do this, I did that. You know, defiance is a characteristic of every alcoholic, and I am, you know, a number one in defiance. And so I was a ward of the state, and then finally convinced them to let me be on my own, and they did, and they gave me money to do that. And so I spent all the money on getting numb. And I lived with different guys. I lived with this one guy and grew up with them, kind of, but I didn't really grow up. And so I went to college because I found out the money that they were giving me for being an orphan was going to stop unless I went to school full time. So I was like, well, I didn't go to high school, but I'll go to college. So I went to I didn't have to go to high school. So I took the test, and I went to college, and I have a degree in criminal justice. They wouldn't let me work in the field, though. Imagine that. I just knew the man when I went for the interview for the probation officer. I knew what he was telling me was, you know, I'm going to have you in the office every week saying, why'd you do this? You know, I don't need to go through this. So when you're ready to work in the system, come on back. And I never went back. I wasn't ready for that. So I work in a parking lot and with a college degree. I was a parking lot attendant. And where do you want me to go with this, God? So what happened was I ended up addicted to some of those outside issues that I was taking. And I ended up going to rehab. And I went to rehab. And I was in New Jersey at the time, but I went to rehab in Glendale, California. And it was really kind of cool. It was good for me to go that far, because if I had been near the people I knew and the places that I was at, I would have just left. And I called my sister long distance and I said, man, it's all this group shit and they're all talking about God. And my sister said, why don't you stay there and pretend you're doing research for a book? And I was like, okay, I can do research for a book. I've never written a book yet, but you know, there's one in me. There's one in all of us. And so I did stay. And, you know, I learned so much. You know, I learned about, I think they must have come in and viewed my family, because I had the typical dysfunctional family, you know, with the enabler and the scapegoat and all that and the overachiever. And it was like they did the whole thing about my family. And I was like, wow, they know who I am, you know, before I even got here. I might be babbling. Okay, so I've been to 4 rehabs. I'm a hard learner, even though I have a little bit of intelligence. I choose not to believe things that people tell me, and I think that's a characteristic of us. And I had to prove to myself what could happen. And I've been with nothing for a long time. You know, I know what it's like to have nothing and not to like anybody or anything and not to like myself. And by coming here and by listening to everybody here, I get to learn how to live and I get to learn how to act. And when I act in a way that I respect about myself, then I start to like myself. You know, and so I came to my first rehab in 1987, and I have almost 3 years sober again. And what I did almost 3 years ago, I got some nitrous oxide from the whipped cream canister, and I inhaled it, and I did it to get high. And I decided, you know, I need to change my sobriety date about that, because I did it to get high. And so my friends say that I'm the only person they know that relapsed on whipped cream. But, you know, it's part of the being humble. You know, I have this huge ego that's been they asked me to speak like 2 months ago. And so for 2 months, I've been, you know, praying to God to please tell my ego to be quiet, because it gets really loud at times. And, they say we're like egomaniacs with inferiority complex. That would be me. And so the things that have come true for me is I'm a single mom now with these 2 lovely daughters here in the front row. And I get to say when I'm wrong. You know, I get to say that I've made a mistake, because I'm not perfect. And when I got here, since I knew I couldn't be perfect, I was going to be the opposite of perfect. But now I can strive. We strive for perfection, but we only make progress. And so I get to be their mom, and I get to, I've gone back to school, and I got the degree so I could be a drug and alcohol counselor. And so next I have to take the test to be one. I was going to take the test today, but the fires moved it out, and so that's a little bit on hold. And it's a huge gift to be able to work with the newcomer all day long. You know, the people who are new or people who have come back to recovery, and you know, I get to share the things that I've learned, because I've been where they are. And I had this woman the other day, and she just did not want to stay. And you know, we're like, we had to go to she came for rehab, but we had to send her to detox because she was drunk. And she came drunk. But that's what I did, you know. I only got there because I ran out. So I was spending a lot of time with her, and I was thinking, how much time do I have? 1 minute? I was thinking, you know, well, she's not going to stay. So why am I spending all this time with her? And I was thinking, what if that was my sister? Or what if that was my daughter? Or what if it was my mom? I'd want the counselor to spend another minute with her, another half hour with her. And all we do is plant the seeds. You know, all we do. Because it's not up to me whether she makes it. It's up to God, you know. And I just ask God all the time, what do I do? What do I say? You know, how do I do this? And hopefully I get some of it right. And I'm just so grateful to be sober, you know. I can't even begin to tell you how important it is to me, the people around me, my family. It took a few years, but my sister came in. She's got a year. She's coming up on 2 years. And it's just so many gifts from this. And you guys know what they are. And if you're new tonight, hang around. Hang around, you know. The gifts are just amazing. What happens to you, the way your life changes. When I was out there, nobody wanted me around. No, I was like, here comes Lisa, hide your stuff, you know. And now, you know, I have a bunch of friends that came just because I'm speaking tonight. And I hope I say something worthwhile, but I think I'm done, right? So, thank you, everybody.